One should not be greedy. Greed got me into a great deal of trouble. Let me tell you how. When I was a young man, against the advice of my father, I went to sea to find adventure and to make my fortune. Oh, I found adventure, all right. Shipwrecked, captured as a slave, escaped from my master. Oh, adventure aplenty, which I luckily survived. Yes, and I even made a fortune in the land of Brazil to which my adventures had brought me. But then I was to experience the greatest adventure of all. I was urged by some greedy tobacco plantation owners to sail from Brazil to Africa to bring back a shipload of African slaves. This time I was to know disaster greater than I had ever known before. My ship had hardly left the shores of Brazil before it was struck by a terrible storm. It was like a hurricane, and it battered the ship for 12 days. The ship was driven aground near an unknown shore. The captain, fearing that it would be broken by the sea and all aboard would be drowned, ordered everyone to abandon the ship. The terrible waves had smashed every lifeboat except one. But all aboard climbed into that one small boat and defied the raging sea. But the angry sea wanted lives, and it took them, overturning the boat and drowning all hands except me. I was cast up on that foreign shore, almost more dead than alive. It was lucky for me that I had learned to swim. When our small boat capsized, we were all swallowed up by that terrible sea, and every other man aboard was lost. I didn't know that, though, until later. I was fighting for my life against the huge waves that lifted me high in the air and then flung me underwater against the ocean floor. Again and again, I thought I'd breathed my last. Perhaps it was my prayers that saved me. At any rate, I did not save myself. The waves that seemed bent on my destruction threw me ashore. And there, as soon as I was able, I crawled beyond their reach. I thanked God for saving my life. And then I looked around for my companions, but I never saw them again, or any sign of them, except three of their hats, one coat, and two shoes that did not match. I was absolutely alone, on a shore beyond the trade routes, a shore seldom, if ever, seen by ships of the day. I was wet, with nothing to eat or drink. I had no weapon with which to hunt and kill for food, or with which to defend myself against another creature. Night was falling, and I was terrified. Finally, exhausted by my fears and my struggle against the sea, I climbed into the top of a small thorny tree and slept. When I awakened, it was broad day, and the sun was shining brightly. The warm, clear weather raised my spirits greatly, and my joy knew no bounds when I looked out to the calm and quiet sea and saw that the ship had been lifted from where it first went aground and driven close to shore, close enough for me to swim to it and look for supplies. I swam out to the ship, and I found a rope dangling from the forecastle. Pulling myself aboard, I rushed to where the provisions were kept, and to my great joy, I found that most of them had been untouched by the seawater, and I ate. My next step was to try and salvage everything aboard that might be of use to me in my perilous isolation. Since there was no boat in which I could carry things ashore, I was forced to build a raft from spare spars and yards and topmasts that we'd carried aboard. I flung as many of them overboard as I could manage, tying each with a rope so that they wouldn't float away. Then I went over the side and tied them together to form a raft, adding spare boards that I knew I would need to build a shelter. Then I emptied three of the seamen's chests, placed them aboard my raft, and filled them with bread, rice, three Dutch cheeses, wine, and a sack of mixed wheat and barley. It was enough to sustain me while I was settling myself ashore. My great finds, though, were the ship's carpenter's tool chest and arms and ammunition. I knew then that no matter what my trials might be, I could give a good account of myself. And since the load was forcing my raft low in the water, I set out for shore. Arrived there, I guided my raft up a small freshwater river or creek and landed it safely. The sun was still high, so I took one of my newly acquired fowling pieces and one of my pistols, loaded them with powder and lead, and climbed to a high ridge. From the ridge, I could see in every direction. And it was thus that I discovered that I was marooned on an island with no other land in sight. I saw, too, that the island was barren and uninhabited. It was with a lonely feeling of being the last man alive in the world that I returned to my raft and unloaded my goods. Fearful that some wild beast might devour me, I barricaded myself with the chests and boards that I'd brought on shore and made a kind of hut for that night's lodging. The next morning, I swam back to the ship and built another raft. This time, I brought back nails and spikes, 2 dozen hatchets, a grindstone, 7 muskets, 2 barrels of musket balls, all the clothes I could find, spare canvas sails, a hammock, and some bedding, and, oh yes, 2 cats and a dog that I discovered in the seaman's quarters. Having got my second cargo ashore, I set to work to build a tent from the sails. Under this, I put everything that might be spoiled by rain or sun. Then I piled all the empty chests and casks around it in a circle to fortify it from any sudden attack by either man or beast. And with 3 barrels of gunpowder, 7 muskets, 3 fowling pieces, 2 pistols, and 2 swords, I'm sure I had the biggest arsenal ever set by for one man. Still, I could not rest until I had removed everything of value from the ship, because I knew that another storm would break her up completely or carry her away beyond my reach. I made 11 trips to that ship and secured great quantities of goods. More provisions, canvas, wood, cables, iron, razors, scissors, even a bag of gold and silver coins. I took everything ashore and felt myself ready for anything. My next task was to build a fortress home, and that took many days. I surrounded it with a stockade, reinforced with the iron cables I had brought from the ship. This cost me a great deal of time and labor, but when it was finished, this fence was so strong and high that neither man nor beast could get into it or over it. The only entrance was by a ladder, which, when I was in my fort, I took in with me. Thus, in my half-tent, half-cave home and storehouse, surrounded by my stockade, I was safe from any storm or enemy. As time passed, I trapped many of the wild goats with which the island was bountifully supplied and raised them in pastures which I had surrounded with other stockades. I also planted rice and wheat and barley with which to make my own bread and cereals. I found grapes and sun-dried them to raisins. I shot fowl and caught turtles to vary my diet. I made clothing and an umbrella from goat skin to protect me from the hot sun as well as the heavy rains. I even caught parrots and taught them to talk in order that I might feel less lonely. And I found God and was grateful for all of the many blessings he had bestowed upon me. Then, one day, after living on the island 15 years, I was walking along the shore when I discovered a great naked footprint. Suddenly, I was afraid. My security was shaken, for I knew not what manner of man had made that print that was so much larger than my own. I hurried back to my fortress and prepared to resist an attack. For several days, I cowered in my fort until thought of my goats that needed milking forced me out. Heavily armed with musket, pistol, and sword, I cared for my goats. Then I looked about my island. I could find no one, nor even any more footprints. Whoever had landed on my island had left. However, they could return, and I set to work preparing against that day. I built a second stockade outside my first stockade, then planted a concealing grove of fast-growing trees outside of that. Then, for another 5 years, I saw no single sign of the human animal. Taking heart, I resumed my trips about my island, and I came upon a sight that filled me with horror. There, on the island shore furthest from my fortress, I came upon the remains of a cannibal's feast. I turned away from the horrid spectacle and rushed back to my fortress. From that time forward, with the aid of a spyglass I had saved from my ship, I kept watch from the hill above that shore. It was in the 23rd year of my residence on the island that I spied 2 canoes of savages heading toward me. I took myself out of sight and saw no more until much later when I walked down to the shore. There, I found evidence of 3 more canoe loads of cannibals on the other side of the island. And both groups had been there to partake of a grisly feast. For a time after that, I forgot my fears because of a ship that foundered near my island. I went to it in the canoe I had dug out of a tree trunk, but there were no survivors. I did recover some cooking utensils, some food and some wine, 1,100 pieces of 8, 6 gold doubloons, and some small bars of gold together with more arms and ammunition. It was then, I think, that I resolved to capture a savage and force him to help me escape from my island to the mainland. But resolve is far from doing, and it was in the 26th year of my stay before I was able to bring this about. I was surprised early one morning by seeing 5 large canoes on the shore on my side of the island, and the people who belonged to them all landed. Since there were 20 or 30 of the savages, and I could think of no practical way for one man to defeat them all, I could do nothing but watch while they dragged 2 miserable wretches from the boats and prepared them for the slaughter. As I watched, they killed one of their victims. Then, to my surprise and shock, the other broke away from his captors and began running toward me. I was dreadfully frightened until I observed that only 3 men were pursuing him. Seeing that he was outstripping his pursuit, I backed off the hill and prepared to intercept the chase. At the creek, the savage escaping jumped into the water and crossed it in 30 powerful strokes. While one of his pursuers was turned back and the other 2 crossed much more slowly, I knew then that now was the time for me to get a servant and companion. So I showed myself and called the escaping man to me. At first, he was as frightened of me as of his pursuers, but when I knocked down one of his enemies with the stock of my musket and shot and killed the other, who was preparing to shoot me with his bow and arrow, he realized that I was a friend. Rushing to me, he knelt on the sand and, lifting one of my feet, placed it on his head in token of surrender and obedience. It was on Friday that this great thing happened, and it was Friday that I named him. I taught him that name, and I taught him to call me Master, the first word in English that I'd heard from human lips in more than 26 years. The following year was the most pleasant of all those that I spent on the island. Friday was a good and loving servant and companion, and intelligent as well. Within the year, he had learned enough English to be able to answer almost any question I could ask. It was thus that I learned about cannibalism as a ceremony.
2 nation fight, eat prisoners, make strong. My nation always fight the better, Master.
If your nation always fights better, Friday, how were you taken prisoner?
They more than my nation, where me was. They take 1, 2, and me. My nation overbeat them in yonder place. My nation take 1, 2, 3, great 1,000.
But if your nation was stronger, why didn't they rescue you from your enemies?
Oh, they run 1, 2, and me in canoe. My nation have no canoe that time.
Oh, I see. What does your nation do with the prisoners they take, Friday? Do they carry them away and eat them, as your enemies did?
Oh, yes, Master. My nation eat mans, too. Don't worry about that.
Well, it isn't exactly comforting. I don't want to be eaten, even if it is a great honor.
No eat you, Master. Only eat enemies, you friend. In my nation now, many bearded white men's like you are living.
Where did they come from?
From big water. Boat with white wings break up, throw men on shore.
Could you take me to them, Friday?
Yes, Master. But first we must build 2 canoe.
I have a canoe, Friday.
2 small, Master. Much water. Must build canoe big like 2 canoe.
Before we could build our big canoe, savages came again to our island. There were 3 canoe loads, and Friday was terrified because he felt certain that they had returned to look for him and would cut him in pieces and eat him. I tried to comfort him, telling him that I was in as much danger as he, but what I had to say must have suffered in Friday's translation. He wasn't comforted.
You die. No help, Friday.
Maybe we won't die, Friday. If we fight well, they will die, not us. And our guns will frighten those we do not kill.
Maybe, maybe not. Maybe just make angry.
We'll soon know. At least we can give a good account of ourselves.
Me die when you die, Master.
It shouldn't come to that, Friday. We have guns and the element of surprise on our side. When they land, we'll sneak through the woods until we're within gunshot and kill as many as we can before they see us.
Yes, Master.
Now you take the 2 fowling pieces and your hatchet. I'll take 4 of the muskets, the 2 pistols, and my sword.
Yes, Master.
Let's be about our business. Telling Friday to follow close behind me, I set out down the hill. When we reached the edge of the woods, I could see that there were 21 of the cannibal savages and 3 prisoners, one of them a white man.
Him bearded white man live my nation, master. Him die.
Not if we can prevent it. If you do exactly as I do, Friday, we can win this little war.
Me do.
As soon as you shoot with one gun, pick up another and shoot again. I've loaded each musket with several small bullets, and they're standing so tightly bunched that we should kill many with each shot.
Me follow, master.
Then take aim. Shoot! Pick up your next gun, Friday. Take aim. Shoot! Good. Now pick up your last gun, Friday, and follow me. Yell as loud as you can. When they bunch up to run to their canoes, shoot into the bunch. Ready?
Ready, master.
Then charge! Now, sword and hatchet for the rest.
2 mans getting away in canoe, master.
Let them go. They'll take word to their nation about our guns, and they'll stay away from this island.
Good. Master, give Friday sword.
I need it.
No, master, rest. Give Friday sword. Friday, finish business.
Friday was as good as his word, finishing off the rest of the enemy with great dispatch. Then, while I was freeing the white man from his bonds, Friday went to the canoes to free the remaining captive, and found to his amazement that we had rescued his father. What a joyful reunion that was. The white man was a Spaniard, to whom I could talk because of the Portuguese language that I had learned in Brazil. However, that had to wait until after Friday and I had fed my 2 subjects and brought them back to strength. In time, we decided that the Spaniard and Friday's father would return to the mainland and bring back the other Spaniards, that we might have hands enough to build a large boat and sail back to civilization. They had been gone 8 days when a strange and unforeseen occurrence intervened. An English longboat, with a shoulder of mutton sail, stood in to shore. My first inclination was to run down to greet them, but fortunately my sense of caution prevailed. With my spyglass, I could see an English ship anchored well offshore, and since there had been no storm to drive it there, and my island was on no charted course, I feared that no good design had brought them there, and that they might well be thieves and murderers. My caution was well taken. When the longboat landed and its 11 passengers disembarked, I saw that 3 were unarmed prisoners. And I wished that the Spaniard and Friday's father were still on the island, for I could tell by the captors' actions that they intended to murder their prisoners, and I was determined to stop them. However, as I said, these rogues were armed, and such obvious knaves that I knew they would not flee from the mere sound of guns. And if we charged them in the open, they would surely cut us down. The tide had gone out since they landed, leaving their longboat stranded high on the beach, which would force them to remain until after nightfall. And since they appeared to be in no hurry to murder their prisoners, I decided to wait until dark to attempt a rescue. But about 2 o'clock, in the heat of the day, the villains left their prisoners on the hot beach while they straggled into the shady woods. Feeling certain that the cool shade would make the knaves sleepy, I marched with Friday, both of us heavily armed, to a point where I could call to the 3 prisoners. My uncouth appearance frightened them, and they could not answer until I said, "Do not be surprised at me, gentlemen. I come as a friend."
"Then you must come from heaven, sir, for our condition is past the help of man."
"All help is from heaven. My man Friday and I are here to serve as heaven's instruments. What is your situation?"
"I'm the commander of that vessel, sir. My men have mutinied. At first they intended to kill me and my companions, my mate and my passenger. They've now decided to maroon us on this desolate place."
"What firearms have they?"
"Only 2 pieces, plus another that they left on the boat. But they are well armed with knives and cutlasses."
"I saw that through my glass. My man and I can kill them all. But I think it would serve us better to take them prisoners, if you think we could prevail upon them to sail the ship."
"I think we could trust all except 2. They are desperate villains, and it would not be safe to show mercy to them."
"Very well. Now, sir, if I deliver you from your dilemma, you must grant me 2 conditions."
"Anything, sir, anything at all. If we are delivered, my ship and all aboard would be at your command."
"Well spoken, sir. Now, if you will but accompany me and my man Friday and point out the 2 ringleaders, we will accomplish the rest." And so it happened in the 28th year of my stay on my island that I restored an English captain to a ship and was myself delivered back to England, together with Friday and the Spaniards from the mainland. My mother and my father had long since passed away. But I'm certain that somewhere they know that I did never again put to sea, or indeed leave the shores of England.